Hello, so welcome. It's another podcast, and my name is Russell, and I am in a three-man midfield, joined by
Gareth
and Rich.
I'll be Joe Dudley to your more.
Can I be Joe Allen?
Artistry and precision and poise.
I'm going to be Gareth Bale playing in a deep ball. I don't really fancy Dave Edwards.
We're going to talk midfielders later. We were having a chat about them just before we started. Guys, you watched the game back. I haven't watched it back, so I'm kind of going on what I kind of recall at the time. And we've sort of, I wouldn't say we've deliberately left it a while since the game, but sort of working on other things, getting in the way. But I'm kind of pleased that we have, because my view has evolved almost day by day in the week after, to the point where, cards on the table, I'm really pleased with the performance, I'm pleased with the results. There are some slight disappointments, so I think you're kind of being picky. And they're sort of circumstantial. It's stuff that, you know, nothing that we could do about. So we're going to talk about that. And Rich, I hadn't picked this up before we started. You mentioned something that Austin Roberts is quoted as saying.
I think it was the day before yesterday. He said that his preference is to try and convince Chris Coleman to stay after the World Cup and sign a new contract, presumably on a campaign-by-campaign basis, which I think is interesting.
Given that Coleman has said that he's looking for a Champions League job.
Thinking about it now, it could be the case that maybe Austin Roberts is thinking he doesn't want the players in any way, shape or form slacking off, thinking this guy's not going to be around 6 months from now or whenever it might be, particularly maybe with regards to what happened to Paul Dummett. I don't know, just as a way of just kind of reining everyone in, just in case. But I think we've got a happy squad, so I'm not sure how likely that would be, but potentially it could be a tactic for some kind of like a motivation thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. And when he says he wants a Champions League job, he presumably means Champions League proper. He doesn't mean like qualifying rounds, because I mean, I think there's still a vacancy at the New Saints, isn't there? Because that guy, which job did he take? Harrison, I can't remember, but he took a job, didn't he? So
Hartlepool,
yes, I think it is. Yeah. Because he's from up that way originally, isn't he? So I'm assuming he's aiming a little bit higher, maybe third qualifying round. Yeah. Okay, so Serbia, before when we did the podcast looking forward to the game, we kind of, I suppose, pragmatically said, well, a draw would be good, but you know, whatever result we have will be greatly shaped by how Ireland and Austria do during the day, and it, you know, that result we preferred a draw, and that's how it fell in the end.
And it was,
albeit late,
I think the best bit of luck we had all weekend came in the Ireland game when their perfectly good winner was disallowed. I mean, that could have buried us actually. If Ireland had won that game, we got big problems. Because Ireland in that game, for all they went behind, and you know, we've talked before about them being limited. I thought they showed big character in that game to get the equaliser when they did. They looked like one of those teams, organised and spectacular teams, like Northern Ireland have been as well, who don't know when they're beaten. And they would always look like getting that equaliser. And then to go on, and they should have had a winner, and we were really, really lucky, actually, that we're not really, really struggling.
So, but for that referee's intervention, we'd be 6 points behind them, which is tough to claw back. But we're not.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did anticipate, I remember in the previous podcast where I sort of mapped out what I thought would happen. And I did have Ireland down as dropping points in that game. It would have been difficult had they been six ahead. However, I do think we'll beat them. So that's three. And then I do think they will drop points again. I think it was a fantastic result. Clearly, it was fantastic. And I'm kind of happy as well that Austria haven't got an extra 2 points. Just because I wouldn't want them coming to Cardiff ahead of us thinking, let's get a point here. That wouldn't be ideal, would it? I think they'll be coming to Cardiff thinking, we have to go again and we have to win this one.
I mean, that's a masking. There's a lot of talk, actually, in interviews after the game. A lot of the pundits saying, oh, it's going to come down to that Ireland game. The Ireland game is going to be massive. It doesn't have to come down to that Ireland game. The massive game is the next one. Someone's out of it when we play Austria. Either us or them are out of it. It's absolutely huge now.
No, I agree. I mean, it's kind of, it's like huge, like cliche, but every game, I'm not going to do the cliche. Every game is the second playoff final game where we basically, we have to win. And I think that's actually a fantastic position for us to be in, given, you want your ideal world, you're 10 points ahead at this stage, but given the struggles we've had in terms of kind of not quite been at it in all of the games, we've kind of been sloppy to lose goals, I would rather think now, okay, every single game is a final, which we're going to have to win. I think that brings out the best in our players, I think.
I mean, yeah, we talked a bit about that, didn't we, a couple of podcasts ago, and there's a couple of things that, to come back to what Russ was saying at the start, the Serbia performance and result in and of itself is good. It just, the disappointment that might have been there instinctively afterwards is about things in the autumn, last autumn, isn't it? It's about the drop points at home, because it would have been such a boost to have won that game. But really, to go out there and get a draw, they're a good team, and that's a good result. But it is also a fifth draw in a row, four of which we've lost the lead in. The one draw against Ireland where we had all the possession and the sort of with a team expected to attack, we didn't really fashion a good chance. So I think I need a bit convincing that we are going to be at our best going and having to win those games. I don't feel like at the minute that we can be that confident that we can, you know, we've got to go and beat Austria and we can just do it. We can score a couple of goals, even at home. I think it's going to be tough and nervy right the way through these next four games.
Oh yeah,
and I, they're winnable games. I'm not going to write those off. But I wonder if it's just going to be not limping. It's going to be a bit more character to it than that. But just going from one narrow victory to another and just having to kind of tick them off really, really kind of gradually like that, nervous all the way.
I 100% agree with that. It will be nervy. I think it is going to be exactly what you're saying, ticking them off. But I think this is kind of what Coleman has realised. It is going to have to be like this. I think, yeah, we'll be missing Alan. I think that's not ideal. Huge, huge thing, I think, is Gareth Bale will be properly fit, I think. Yeah. I mean, he kind of alluded to it before this game, well, in the last couple of weeks. He came back from injury way too early and he said, I won't be doing that again. Proper full summer. I think he'd be really buoyed by life, I think, in Madrid, working with Zidane. So that will, I mean, that's going to compensate for Alan being out. And I think Bale probably feels like he's due a couple of goals for us.
His club season, this season just finished, has been stop-start because of injuries. And, you know, maybe you could lay some of that, maybe, you know, the exertions over the summer, I don't know. But if you think back to the club season running up to the Euros, that's probably his best season at Madrid to date in terms of, you know, return time on the pitch, goals, assists, the I think it's what you call hard stats, yeah?
Yeah.
The hard stats. And I can see him now, that's it, relax, feet up, last game is in the Champions League final, in Cardiff, whatever that's worth. I think you can just focus on fitness, and I reckon, mark it down now, I reckon he's going to have a monster season next year. I think he's going to be top, you know, Ronaldo's another year older, he's won the Euros, he's won another, you know, Champions League. You know, he's not there for that much longer. And I just think Bale's going to have a monster season next year, and this summer will do him the world of good.
Jinx that, haven't you now? He's definitely unfit for definitely putting out 3 days before the Austria game now.
But then I did call the Russia game last year, on which today, as we're recording, is the anniversary, and I said, you know, we're gonna do them, feel confident. And it could be. I think I said three or four. I'm going to say two or three, but I think I said three or four. And
no one's going to check. Just say you said three.
Even I said three. And that came. So I don't know, maybe.
So you don't do that many bold predictions, but when you do them.
Yeah. It's like going feet first. Both feet. Man and ball.
So the Serbia game itself, we should probably talk about that.
Well, like I said, I find it hard to criticise the performance. I've heard people criticise the performance, and I think it largely boils down to the frustration of not capitalising as fully as we might on the Ireland result, as we say. And I think it's down to dropping another lead, as you say. But I think by and large, if you just look at the game on its own merits, I don't think we could have done a huge amount more without our chief attacking threat, admittedly.
I mean, it was definitely mission accomplished, I would say. Probably Chris Coleman, which, of course, he's never going to change. We know this. Maybe could have reacted a bit quicker, I think, subs-wise, perhaps. But I do think he went into the game, the objective was not to lose. He felt the best way of not losing was to continue as we were going. And I think that's kind of... I like that, because this is a guy, I think, who has a plan, and the plan was to draw, and he didn't want to jeopardise that by maybe trying to go for the win. He might have been thinking, OK, Ireland have lost, let's really, really try and kind of blast them, even when they kind of got the equaliser. I was kind of happy, I mean, even in his conservatism, that we got the point.
I watched it again yesterday, and I was persuaded by the end of watching the game and listening to some of the sort of analysis after that it was a decent performance, and you know, and we did well. But a lot of that comes from that we finished the game strongly. Up until about, I don't know, I suppose, when they scored, I was thinking, do you know what? Looking back at this now, it's in a lot of ways it's a lucky draw. There, though they didn't, it sounds a weird thing to say because they didn't have a lot of, Hennessy didn't make a save, I don't think, all game. They didn't have a lot of shots on target. But that idea that we went away and set up and got to get a draw, I think it's true. But we looked a bit more vulnerable. If you think of away in Belgium or home to Bosnia even, way, way back, and we'd done sort of similar things. When we were so effective at stopping even the opportunity of getting balls into the boxes, what you had in the Serbia game with their wingers and their fullbacks a couple of times, really kind of deep down the pitch, playing low balls in across, and it felt a little bit more like, rather than kind of shape and doubling up and stopping that ball coming in, it was bodies on the line all the way through. It was sometimes one, two interceptions just getting in front of the striker. I think you ride your luck if you play like that, and I think the goal when it came had been coming, and I was wrong in a sense that when they scored, I thought, well, they're going to get another now. But we kind of raised it a bit after that, which was pleasing. But I think the luck went with us a lot in that game.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I take your point. I think it was a great result in the sense that previous years we would have folded completely, I think. And you're right, it was really kind of good to see. We did actually kind of get a bit stronger. It was a fantastic result. And I think the players played really well. In terms of like the defensive stuff, I mean, it's been... My first kind of hint of this was in the away game in Bosnia. That was the first, in the qualifier, the first bad defensive performance we had. And it hasn't really consistently tightened up since then. And I mean, I don't know whether there's an element of teams are now studying us a lot more and putting plans in place to kind of attack perceived weaknesses, or whether we're just a bit sloppy. It kind of seemed to coincide when Paige left initially.
Simon, sorry.
Yeah, one of those two guys. And I mean, we haven't had that solidity since, I don't think. In the same kind of, I mean, we're competent defensively, but you're right, when you're making kind of blocks, you shouldn't need to make blocks, really. You should be stopping it before that happens.
I agree. There's a run, our goal is kind of weirdly sandwiched between two of the periods where we were most in danger. There was a run of three or four balls into the box around about 27, 28, 9, 29 minutes. Mitrovic at that point must have been really frustrating for their attacking players because he's not quite getting the positions and not quite getting the end of things. And later on, similar sort of thing. And the commentators, when winding into half time, they're using phrases like hanging on, riding luck, could have gone anywhere. And that's not how it felt in some of those games over the last 18 months where we've kind of set up to be defensive and in shape. It felt like we did a job on them. We were confident. We were snuffing things out all the time. Increasingly, I think we look stretched, and we're not... Clean sheets are harder and harder to come by, actually, for us now, other than the Ireland game where they didn't really offer much going forward. And I suppose we could... If we're talking about, we'll be kind of riding our luck a little bit. You don't get those penalties very often. I mean, that was a...
I couldn't believe that decision.
Gift of a penalty. I mean, that they gave
it was a penalty, but yeah. I simply could not believe it was awarded to us away from home in Eastern Europe. I mean, that's great.
And the referee, good positioning, because he's looking, if you look where he is, he's looking straight at the two of them. He probably can't quite see Vokes's arm on the guy's shirt because that's be obscured by the other guy, but he has a proper handful that you can see it coming right down his back, and the referee must have been looking right at that.
And I think
fair play, he gives it.
He's there to simply do that, because he's not jumping, he's just there to hold it. Yeah, I'm going to back the guy in front to see if he can get on it. Rogues gets good leverage, whether it's legal or not, you know, is irrelevant. But he's just there to hold him. So, I mean, it's a cynical pull, and you see them a lot, and they usually don't get given. But I just think, personally, I think, and I know it sounds like an arch traditionalist, but I think if you started a new league season and just had right crack down on that, it'd be sorted by Christmas.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it would stop. But
to balance it out, where the luck didn't go for us, and I literally freeze frame this last night to double check on it, the keeper should have been sent off when he fouled Ramsey. It's a clear goal scoring opportunity. If you freeze it where the keeper brings him down, look where the ball is, imagine he's a stride on, there's no way, even the covering defender's not far away, but he's 2-3 strides away. Ramsey's another stride on and sliding the ball into that empty net before anyone gets anywhere near him. Mm. Clear goal scoring opportunity, he should have been sent off, and the game's very different. Mm-hmm. So actually, not all the luck went our way. It's just because it's on such a tight angle, it's easy for the referee not to make that decision.
It's not near the goal, is it? Is who's going to argue.
But if you're coming down the middle of the pitch, and even if you're 30, 40 yards away, and it's the last man, the keeper takes you out halfway in the half, it's goal scoring opportunity to give it. And I think it's just as easy for someone like Ramsey to take a stride on, slide it in that net. Mm. You know, it's only the width of the half the width of the penalty area.
Yeah. We've sort of.
Ramsey was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think he was really, really good. And kind of took an awful lot of responsibility, which I think he kind of is good for him. And he produced a really, really clever, productive performance, which capped off by a great penalty as well.
Well, I said last time, I said, you know, again, we were, you know, that game was on the anniversary of the Slovakia game at the Euros, and I was wanting and expecting as well, you know, the Euro 2016 vintage Ramsey performance, and I think that's what he put in. I thought Joe Allen was great just before he started, someone on the weekend who thought he had a poor game, and it just baffled me how anybody could possibly think that.
I mean, he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was absolutely brilliant. Really, really clever. Just a complete performance, I thought.
Timing of the transfer window reopening, was that a factor there, or is that just because that's what he does these days for us?
Well,
particularly away from home.
Yeah, he's at a club in decline now, so people will be looking maybe. But yeah, he was great, and he'll be a loss.
Yes. Yeah. And I thought as well, I mean, I thought Joe Ledley was brilliant as well. I mean, how he lasted, I don't know.
Yeah. I think, he's with a different kind of performance now. He's having to sort of almost just chase around and sort of, he's not making as many tackles. He's perhaps not as great a cover for the defenders, but he's constantly closing down the space and harassing those defenders. And they didn't have a lot of time on the board in midfield. It's only that when they score, straight after a substitution, isn't it? And I think it's a little bit of confusion over how the midfielders are shaping up in front of the defenders there. And if you look at the point where he plays the forward ball, that guy into the striker, neither Ledley or Allen have quite decided who's going to go and who's going to maybe help cover Davis, who kind of gets drawn, or Williams gets drawn towards the player, and Davis is left exposed then, and they score. But maybe if we haven't just had a substitution, we're a little bit more organised, we cope with that.
I think it's important for Joe Ledley as well, from our perspective, is that he finds a club early, I think. Because he needs, as good as he was yesterday, last week, you wouldn't want him going in again on no fitness, on kind of no match fitness. So he needs a pre-season, pre-season games.
Yeah. Well, it's probably not quite as crucial, but look at Hal Robson-Kanu last year. Didn't go anywhere until the deadline day, right at the end of August. He had no kind of meaningful pre-season. Never really had any kind of run of games. And when he came and was in and around the squad in the autumn, he was no good for more than, you know, cameo roles and bit part. And considering what he'd managed to do in the summer, that was a loss for Ledley. And with no Joe Allen in that team, it's going to be really crucial that he's fit and he's able to.
There's a lesson there, isn't there, for other players? I mean, I'm sure it's different circumstances, different positions as well, different points in their career. You know, Daddy's a lot older, but to leave it that late, get a move. I mean, Kahn's had a dismal season.
Yeah,
let's be honest. And
he got bought by a club, by a manager who didn't want to sign him.
There's other factors behind that transfer. I thought Vokes as well.
Yeah,
I thought he was, you know, brilliant. It really. He played his game, he held the ball up, he got onto end of crosses, maybe he could have done a bit better with a couple of headers, but he ran the channels more than I think I've ever seen him since he was maybe coming into the side at 18, 19. And that one sort of lung-busting move is a camera angle. And it catches Ramsey, I can't think who the other player was. Was it Allen? It might have been Ledley. Basically kind of, well, laughing. It's kind of like, you know, everybody recognising that that's it now. There's nothing left in that tank. Okay. And I actually called for, you talking about substitutions earlier, I actually called for both substitutions earlier than he made them, but I would have brought Lawrence on far sooner.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, folks clearly was tiring. He put in a hell of a shift.
He occupied the... We've had to play different ways. We haven't really had a game where our kind of centre forward has occupied their defenders. We've kind of relied on wanting to have someone to do that. It's often been Hal's role in the past, Church's role, and they've done it in a very limited way, and often it's not been easy for Bale or Ramsey to find a space. But it was great to see the little bits of space, the little interplays that Allen and Ramsey were able to do on a couple of occasions, just because there's Vokes and at least two people often are having to have a think about what he's doing, whether a quick ball's coming in. He'd gone off by then, but that ability for kind of Allen wasn't a box to box midfield. He was like a touchline to touchline midfield. It wasn't the old game, but in fact he managed to get right up on the edge of the penalty area and then slide that ball into Ramsey. We nearly won it with that chance in the near post. That was a terrific chance. Yeah. Keeper did fantastic, mate.
Yeah,
with that, stood up brilliantly.
Well, yeah, which, you know, we worked their keeper more than they worked ours, and I think that's the annoying thing. And you know, again, before you started, you said Mitrovic took his goal well. I mean, he did. Left foot finish. Maybe Hennessy can do better than near post. It's laid on a plate from there by that little tasty back heel.
Mm.
And I think you're right, guys. We were getting blocks in. There were last ditch tackles. Ashley Williams is centimetres away from getting something on that, and maybe stopping the ball even, but certainly kind of, you know, obstructing the ball's path into Mitrovic's path, and that was frustrating. But other than that, I mean, they didn't have a shot on goal. We worked their keeper more. It is frustrating in that respect, but we're, what are we, let's call the table for a minute, 4 points, isn't it? Top two on 12, third and fourth both on 8.
I think that was interesting, and I imagine if not already they will sit down and look at this a bit more closely, but Chris Coleman was not quite at it with his analysis of the group when he was interviewed after. He talked about 4 wins to be looking at winning the group and maybe 3 wins and a draw to still be in a chance for second. There's no way 3 wins and a draw gets us anything other than a very kind of obscure turn of results, and 4 wins probably only gets us second again other than in a very unlikely.
Well, this is it. Although we were talking about taking a draw and wanting a draw in Dublin, and I think actually Moldova winning or drawing
Georgia
for us, increasingly less in it for Georgia. I think the downside to that, although in our group that kind of pegs everybody back, the downside is I think pretty much now the group whose runner-up won't make the playoffs, I think it's between us and, I forget the other group, but I think that's pretty much right. And that's the point. The number of draws means that the total that the second place can get is just getting, you know, less and less in comparison to the other groups. So
even if we somehow miraculously got second on less than 20 points, that's definitely counting us out. And even 20 points...
I pretty much think so. And I think on this basis, even if we'd won in Serbia, I think we're still probably needing 4 wins.
Mm.
So on that basis, it hasn't sort of changed anything. It's basically, you know, 20 points is the target now.
Mm.
And you just hope that other teams don't get their
When I calculated it, I wish I had it with me now... Because I did have this down as a draw and then the 4 wins afterwards. And I did a couple of kind of variations. And on the basis of us winning the 4 plus the draw, I definitely had us topping the group.
For us to definitely not be able to top the group, all it takes is Ireland or Serbia to get 21 points, another 9 points. Let's assume they beat Moldova and Georgia. They're 6. They need one more win to make sure we can't come first, which means either Serbia or Ireland, one or the other of them beating each other, or Serbia beating Austria is enough then. So unless Serbia drop points to Austria and Serbia and Ireland draw with each other, we can't win the group on 20 points.
I think I had them But I think at Republic, I really wish I had it with me now, dropping points, kind of grinding to a halt. And Serbia, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to admit it because I've completely forgotten. But to me, it seemed highly, highly vibe. I must have been, Chris Coleman must have been on the same train of thought, clearly.
It's, and there's a way it can happen.
I don't think Serbia are particularly great, to be honest. I think they're decent.
There's a way it can happen, but it's less likely than other things that may well pan out. And if Georgia start picking up a draw against someone big here and there, not us, hopefully, then that changes things again. But any predictions now have got to be based on everyone taking points off from Georgia and Moldova.
And of course, they're not just four games in isolation. The last two are a double header, where we have to go all the way to Georgia first to then come back. Ireland just have to go to Dublin and then Cardiff.
Yeah.
And I think that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Hopefully they've got nothing left in it, but riding on it, I don't know. And I said it before, and again, I hope I'm proved right, but I sense Ireland's campaign is just beginning to slow down, and I think eventually it will grind to a halt. I don't think they'll be in the running.
I don't know. I'm less sure about that after their Austria game. They fight them out. They find a way, Ireland, every time to get the result they need to get, and they're in the driving seat because they're 4 points ahead of us.
Well, I think let's look at when we play Austria. I mean, that again will put Ireland, Austria in a kind of a context, I guess. I mean, we really, 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 truly should have beaten Austria. Ireland kind of got back in it very late against them, and yeah, correctly. Unfortunately for them, they had a goal ruled out, which seemed like a pretty fine goal. So I'm not sure whether that draw against Austria. I mean, it's because the group is so kind of tight, and it seems like there's no kind of standout performer, is there? I think it's quite hard to gauge who is going to become, if anyone, like the kind of strong presence in the group.
I don't think anyone is. I think that's why for them. I don't think anyone is. And the issue, if we go into that last game, if that last game, as everyone predicting, is everything on it, as against Ireland, if Ireland only need a draw, that's right up their street. If Ireland only need a draw, they probably get a draw. And same, they're going to be at home to Serbia. If they only need a draw, they'll probably get a draw with Serbia. I don't know. They're the sort of team that does that. And I agreed back when we talked about it in previous podcasts. Aging team, limited players, perhaps it starts to die out for them. I don't know. They're big characters, and every game that goes by, they're maintaining that lead.
I think us at home, if we need to beat them, given the kind of, I guess, there'll be a little bit of bad blood, I think, it's fair to say. If we've got a full team or near enough, I think we beat them at home. I just can't see them getting a draw. Because I guess when this team has had the kind of the moment, the challenge, where they have to kind of make it happen, they have done it. This group of players I'm talking about. You could argue Portugal, they failed, but...
We'll give them a semi-final for major tournament.
Yeah.
Even I'll cut them some slack on that one.
So so when they've had that moment where they've had to do it, ultimately they have to. And I think it's just there's like a kind of a maturity to the team where up against Ireland, we'll beat them. But a couple of months now till September, and we'll see.
Was Ramsey's penalty a good penalty? It was a matter of some debate on a lot of the stuff I've listened to. I'm going to make the case that even if he, I hope he didn't mean to put it to the side, because if he's trying to dink one to the side, it's a dreadful penalty, because you've got a 50-50 chance the keeper's saving that. You don't dink to the side, it's illogical. Captain.
It's a great penalty because he scored it. If he misses it, it's a dreadful penalty. I think that's how it gets remembered.
Didn't you say the keeper was telling him, I'm not moving from the middle, and was kind of psyching him out? Possibly, I think when Ramsey kind of went to take the penalty, because I mean, there were so many stops and starts, he was just waiting for the movement, and then just to cover his back, he saw it, and then he just went.
I'm not sure because that's what kind of made me think about it. Cause I don't think he's looking at the keeper's move. Those last couple of steps before he takes it, his eye on the ball. And if you're just going to dink it, you dink it down the middle, because that way the keeper's dive and he can't get at it. If the keeper goes the other way, keeper saves it.
there's no way his eye was completely on the ball. It's just simply not. There would be like, there's a sense. I mean, even as like a dreadful footballer, I've got a sense of where the keeper's going. You can kind of half see something. That's kind of a oxymoron or whatever, but you can feel him moving, I think. But yeah, in answer, no, it wasn't a brilliant penalty. No, you are right. Yeah. You don't.
And I'll give him because he was.
I think he meant it, but I just think it was. There's better ways to score.
Clearly, he meant to dink it. And I think that in itself suggests that he was oozing confidence, and that takes some.
Yeah. Oh no. All credit to
it. It's in the 35th minute. Did he do it in the 85th minute?
Cool as.
That would be even more impressive.
But what I was getting is that I hope he kind of scuffed it. I hope he sliced it, because I wouldn't want to think that he tried to dink it into the side, because it doesn't make any sense. He messed it up and he got away with it. Brilliant.
I was annoyed when he came out and said afterwards that he didn't realise that was the stadium and that was the goal that Panenka did it. Yeah. And that I felt let down by that, because absolutely. I just thought, if he'd have gone, yeah, well, I mean, you know, I was a keen student of the history of the game. I was fully wet. You know, I wanted to learn how he takes like a yearbook. He takes an almanac with him to every away game. And he's telling all of the others, you know, famous results in the past at these grounds and you know, other famous matches and things. But no, he just
didn't. I don't think he's that guy in that squad to do.
No,
it.
I suppose. That's
but he's very deadpan. So who knows what he was thinking?
He does his talking on the pitch. I think is what a famous Chinese ancient philosopher once said. But I think he was great, and I think it would be great if he could just get a move away from Arsenal over the summer.
Yeah,
it's worth highlighting, because we've picked that individualism. We some of the more uncelebrated ones like Ledley and Vokes and that. What kind of made me warm more and more to it as a result in the performance is that if you think through the whole team, everyone was good. You know, no one had a bad game. You think about Jazz Richards coming in as well. He was very, very good. Edwards did a really good job for that sort of 70 minutes. It was one of those performances where, like we've done before, you go and everyone knows their job. The players that come in and do well. And we're effective, even if that role's maybe a bit more limited or they themselves are not spectacular players.
It was a really you keep Richards in the same position, don't you, now? Because Taylor will still be suspended.
Yeah.
There's no... I know we've talked about Ben Davis and everything, but based on that...
I'd still love to see Ben Davis having more licence to get forward. And a couple of really great balls when he'd strode on down the pitch a little bit. I think there's...
Well, maybe at home there is an argument, but I mean, based on, you know, what someone who is usually, you know, a right full-back or wing-back coming in, just slotting in on the left, I thought he was great. And his position is always... He's a lot better than Taylor's.
Yeah,
I don't think he's the attacking threat. I mean, Taylor's not a great attacking threat. No. I don't think he attacks that much at all. But he's really, really good positioning all the time. And he's one of those players. He's just 7 out of 10 all the time. If he's a Championship manager, he's 7 out of 10. He's never a 6. He's rarely an 8. Just 7 out of 10. And you know, you take that in your fullback.
And he did a good job getting back and establishing the Cardiff City team end of the season. He could have a really good season now next year. Jazz Richards really. You know, really stick a claim to be in that team regularly.
Yeah, really, really good. I mean, when he's played for us, he's done a great job.
Yeah,
he's kind of he seems what's really I really like about him. He seems able to kind of follow instructions.
Yeah,
he seems very kind of smart in how he kind of.
You can imagine he's a coach's dream.
Yeah,
just says right, okay, this is the game plan. This is your position. This is your role in the game plan. Do this. Don't do that. And he just goes out and does it.
And that's probably why Warnock. I mean, it would have been really easy, I think, for Warnock to ditch Jazz Richards, because I think probably wages, I think, comparative in the Cardiff squad, will be relatively high, I think, for his position. So it would have been, I think, really, really easy for Warnock to kind of move him on. But yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic. And I think what's cool with Ben Davis, a friend of mine is a lifelong season ticket holder at Tottenham, and then kind of it'll be interesting to see what happens next season with Ben Davis, because there was like a lot of stuff about Rose leaving anyway. But apparently the kind of feeling is that Ben Davis, even though Rose has been injured, has even in Rose's absence, has kind of become Pochettino's pick now.
Interesting.
So that'll be, I think that'll be great for him and for us as well, because Pochettino's a fantastic trainer.
I don't know about that. I think, you know, Danny Rose, I thought, did very, very well to establish himself as that first choice ahead of Ben Davis. And I think, you know, fair enough that he did. He's a good player. But they've now got a Champions League season ahead. They've got so many games to play. That's a squad and a team in a position that can sustain two left backs and two right backs probably. And if it ever gets to the point where he's not getting enough games, I think that you won't be short of suitors. But you know, I think he was really good while Rose was out, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if, you know, he's a serious kind of threat to Rose's shirt now.
Yeah, well, the kind of what my friend was saying was it's kind of viewed now as he's won the shirt, and then it'll be up to Rose. Yes, I mean, I think it's looking really good. Just hopefully a nice, chill summer with no injuries in pre-season. And I think all of the... Yeah, Ledley you want to see sorted out. Ideally, you want to see Hal sorted out, I think, probably. Because I do think Hal can survive a summer at West Brom. Because if he was, like, fourth choice this season, West Brom will be buying more players. He's either going to, at best, stay... fourth choice. It'd be really cool to see Woodburn do something, I think, or be in Klopp's plans pre-season, give him that boost, because I think it would be great to have. I can't see Coleman changing the team unless it's kind of forced upon him, probably, but if Woodburn could do something to kind of force that change, that would be great, because the other teams won't know about him. There won't be that same kind of level of analysis on Woodburn as there would be with Bokes or Hal.
And anyone like Woodburn or Wilson or anyone out of the sort of under 21s coming through now is a bonus, however that may come about. I think some of our fringe players from have been in the squad a bit longer. Be interesting to see what Lawrence do now. He's finished
Lawrence Ipswich. Is a big one.
Hughes,
yeah.
Same. Marley Watkins has gone to Norwich, I think, isn't he? You know, can he sort of hit the ground running at I suppose what you consider a bigger sort of championship team. You know, these are players who might be crucial for us in the autumn. You know, Alan's got the suspension this time, but there's three or four more other, you know, important players on bookings. It could well be that we go through these four games, you know, needing players to come in like Richards and Edwards came in this time. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that was actually something I was really, really happy about. Was for me, the nightmare scenario was we get through the three games on the third game. You get bookings.
You get them all, yeah.
So for me, it's like, okay, let's just take one at a time. If it has to be that way, and hopefully then you don't have any for the last game. But if you're gonna have to deal with suspended or injured players. Mm. We've done that with reasonable results. I think we're in a good position. But yeah, the nightmare scenario is all of them in a big rash of bookings. And that hasn't happened, so that's good.
Wonder if you take a couple from Moldova. In a second, that's what we speculated about. It's one of those things I don't think I believe professional footballers ever do. But were we to kind of be winning against Austria, is it worth kind of, because I think Ramsey's on one, I think Ledley's on one, Williams, Ben Davis, at least three of those. Maybe I've got
there
one.
There was a lot
wrong.
Of, I remember he listed them on before the game, and it was just like, blimey, if we can get away with losing only one of these players, we've done well. And it was.
Do you just have a couple of them throw the ball away in the last 5 minutes against us?
I feel like you could justify doing it with one, I think, and that would be up to Coleman and Roberts to decide who that would be.
Certainly from this point, I'd be annoyed if Bale picks up. If Bale misses any more games through suspension with only four.
Yeah. It's a terrible rule. It was a terrible rule in the Euros. It's a terrible rule now in the qualifiers. Two bookings.
It doesn't really make any sense, I don't think.
I think both.
And it punishes teams with smaller
pools of players. Yeah. But then, of course, other teams will also be running the risk of. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure at least one of the Serbian players who picked up a booking, possibly the two outfield players, because the keeper got a yellow card as well. I think two, according to what list I've got here. I think at least one of those misses their next game.
Who wants that? Well, no fans want to see games with less of the top players playing. Player behaviour isn't any better on the back of it, as far as I can judge. Maybe that's just my instinctive view on it. It doesn't work. It's a pointless kind of system. You know, if it was three bookings, it wouldn't change anything, except you'd have big players playing in big games that people want to pay and watch more often. Daft. Unless you're playing a team who's got someone suspended who's important. then it's great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, I mean, hypocrisy's fine in these circumstances.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and our hypocrisy is more justifiable than other people's. Well, not sure there's too much to say about it. It's been a long old season.
Yes.
It's hotter. I'm boiling.
I am.
Yeah. Hotter than a FIFA executive committee member's collar when the FBI are in the building. So I don't know what we're going to do with ourselves until the next game. What's the next game? Austria, isn't it? So early September.
Early September.
I miss that. I mean, they're always rubbish games, rubbish results, but I quite miss the mid August friendly. I mean, managers hated them, didn't they? To have their players back for like one
game.
I'm
quite happy to not have that.
Yeah.
Will there be a squad meetup?
No.
I
don't know. It depends on how many players in the September games are.
Yeah. I mean, managers are really reluctant to let go of their players, aren't they? Yeah. These days, early season. But I think
the summer, get fit, stay fit, play a couple of games at the start of the season. That's what we want from our players now.
Yeah. I do think, and I know a lot of people go on about it, and I wax and I wane on this. I've gone a bit lukewarm on it, and having been a bit, you know, more kind of forceful on the idea, but I do think maybe there's a need for a friendly at some point. Because of, you know, those players you were talking about, you know, getting them in from the start, no point chucking them on with like 10, 15 minutes.
So it's difficult to see where it's coming, Mike, because the double headers in the qualifiers, probably not going to have one before a double header playoff if we're in a playoff, are we?
Well, of course, the worst case scenario is that actually, you know, you be careful what you ask for. We have friendlies in November because we don't have a playoff. And because we've missed out on qualification, if we've qualified, then those are perfect.
Yeah, I'm not sold on the friendlies, to be honest, because I think the tempo they're played at, how can you actually learn whether someone, I mean, you can score like a 20 yarder against Northern Ireland in a friendly. I'm not sure what that means. Like, I think because you've got a small pool of players, you bring what. It's not about developing loads and loads and loads of potential players. It's about kind of having, okay, is this guy ready? Can we bring him on for 15 minutes?
Because
and then you have to trust your judgment.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And has Jazz Richards needed friendlies to do what he's done over the last 18 months coming into the team? I think it's...
Like, our strength is our coaching setup.
Yeah.
And then I think they know if someone can do it.
Mm. And the pathway... No, I think you're probably right. I mean, I suppose the flip to that is you have... Some, you know, the more friendlies you get actually can be counterproductive because, and I think the Irish boys who joined us before the podcast for the Irish game, and Ireland are always playing friendlies, but both North and South, capping lots and lots of players, playing lots and lots of friendlies, they go to America to play games, they'll do all of this sort of stuff, and then when a qualifier comes around, it's pretty much the same 9 or 10 players, which probably then is counterproductive for the players on the fringe, thinking, well, you know, when am I going to get a break into this? So I don't know. But there is a sense, I think, it is a little bit harder to get out of our side than into it, but
that's up to the people who are on the outside.
Absolutely. I do agree with that, but it has to be seen that the pathway has to have, if the pathway is lauded, you know, deservedly so, then there has to be a destination for that, and it has to be in that senior team. So I think,
but it doesn't have to be. For most players, it won't be.
No,
it's
one of the people, you
have to earn it. I don't know, the friendlies will come around, you know. Adam Matthews and Andrew Crofts will get another game in the spring. I don't doubt it, you know, for 10 minutes off the bench. But, you know, if that's what the friendlies were for us last spring, really, weren't they? Opportunities for players who were never going to be good international players for us. So, you know, unless we've got those players and we think, you know what, they're going to have a serious go in the first team. And for all we talk about them, we're hopeful for them. Ben Woodburn is not at the moment a serious contender to regularly start for Wales, you know, and giving him a friendly now isn't going to change that until he's doing something. I know I bang on about club players, club form, whatever, and not everyone kind of agrees with me on that, but I think that's their starting point, you know. And I think chucking someone from the under 21s into a Wales friendly has limited impact, certainly.
Totally.
What Richard's saying compared to if they're being drafted into a 10-day training camp, you know, and that's, I'd say that's far more preferable.
Yeah, and then you kind of, you learn from them, you've already understood what they're like from kind of the age groups, and then it's 15-20 minutes to make an impact as a sub in a competitive game, or you're starting a competitive game and you're trusting your judgment as a trainer. So and then the player will have the character because you'll know about that already. So that's fine.
Okay, maybe you've won me over.
And we still have the friendlies when we haven't got a qualifier for each, because I want to go to a game.
I think we said last time that this demand for friendlies actually is just fans being selfish.
Yeah.
Ultimately, isn't it?
And I think as well, kind of, why take the squad out of that intense mentality by having a friendly? Because there's no possible way you can make them perform or focus or concentrate as hard in a friendly.
And you don't take the squad out of that. You take the squad minus 5 key players or 6 key players, don't you, ultimately?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were a little bit better, maybe. Was it away in Ukraine? Perhaps we had a couple more players available. But you just notice who's missing. You notice who's not playing in those games, and then you wonder how much the people who are coming in are actually learning, because they're not learning how they fit into a team with Gareth Bale or Aaron Ramsey in it, are they?
Yeah, no. Of the friendlies we have played, I think the Ukraine one was probably the one that was most useful, because you had a chance to look at Alan and Hughes, and Lawrence started, and you know, things like that. So I think, you know, we have gleaned something. But I agree, it's probably not.
And you know, I mean, like, they have their moments. Those couple of Netherlands friendlies have been launch pads for a couple of players, and you know, there's merit in them, but it's not a clamour, I don't think.
But then you play in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
You're playing a quality side. Yeah. It's not Northern Ireland or sides like that. But okay, keep it a mischief over summer. We'll probably get together and do a couple of things.
We'll think of something suitably nerdy and niche, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. That you can be guaranteed. So until next time.
Well, cheers. Have a good summer.